Hello and welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks. Season 3 is going to be about all my favorite topics, including slow living, inner work, entrepreneurship, creativity, spirituality, slow traveling, and health. I am Ophélie Cabanero, your host. Enjoy the episode. Good afternoon, Evelyn.
Hello, Ophélie.
It's the second time now that you are here, that we are here together. Yeah, I'm super looking forward to it. The first time was already maybe 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
And I remember we talked about cool things, or they were definitely super interesting and inspiring. So I'm really excited for this one.
Yes, thank you so much. Last time we were in a cafe on the veranda, that was also lovely.
Yeah.
And now we see each other online. But I'm also very excited to speak about my favorite stuff, you know.
Yeah. So you are a psychotherapist or psychologist?
Yeah, it's psychologist and psychotherapist, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you are also a yoga teacher. And what else? How do you describe yourself?
Yeah, I'm also, I'm teaching meditation since many years. The mm-hmm. first thing that I've actually studied was sophrology, mm-hmm. which is not so known in the English or German speaking areas, but it's very well known in France and mm-hmm. the French part of Switzerland. And it all started with that. That's a consciousness training.
Mm-hmm.
But I always try to, besides the psychology study, to do something in the spiritual realm already.
Mm-hmm. So did sophrology, I also always forget that you do that. did sophrology lead to this spiritual psychology mix or?
Yes, I would say so. Because basically I was, at the time I was an athlete, I was a snowboard competitor, and I got to know this sophrology as a form of mental training,
mm-hmm.
and it helped me so much in the winning in the figures that I did. I did freestyle, and even when I was I had an injury and I focused on mentally training figures, and I could do them afterwards on the snow. I was so impressed that how much we can, you know, how much more we can use our consciousness than we think. So that I decided first to do this sophrology training or education, and then parallel I did psychology studies because nobody knew sophrology. So I thought I might as well do something like a good base. But I must say, speaking now about psychology, I was very disappointed about the studies. You know, it was so, in my view, so dry.
Mm-hmm.
So that after 2 years, I intended to stop and become a teacher, but then I looked into teaching and I said, no, I'm already too old for that, or I can't do it. So I went back to the studies. I started only when I was 25, and I did it, but I did it, and I was at the same time, of course, there was inspiring stuff, but there was also a lot of statistics and you know, just very dry. And I thought, how will I become a good therapist like that, you know? So for me, the addition with sophrology and then my spiritual path was always like a normal development for me in order to do something useful, you know. I like, beside the study, I needed some exercises of sophrology which I could apply at home and you know, go in and meditate and research. And it was, for me, in a way, the practical part of the psychology studies I found in sophrology.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I didn't know you did it first also. That's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you are offering your, we fast forward many years, but now you offer your spiritual psychology training that starts in March, and I'm interested in hearing a bit more about this mix of spirituality and psychology and how they complement each other, or what you have to say about it.
Yeah, of course, it's a big topic, and it's my, in a way, so far lifelong topic, because I've been 30 years on the path, on a spiritual path, and 20 years I do psychotherapy. So I call it spiritual psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So the difference between psychology and psychotherapy is that a psychologist studies psychology in the university, and a psychotherapist does after that, like a 4 to 6 year training in psychotherapy, so that you can treat illnesses, psychological illnesses. And I mean, there's a lot to say about the words also, spirit and psychotherapy. We can come back to that maybe later. But basically said, it's like some people would say it's not possible to bring them together, because they are kind of different aspects of our existence. So psychotherapy has the view that there is illnesses and diagnosis. I was just in a continuing education, and they said it's 55,000 illnesses we have currently that we can name not only in the psychological area, but then we give diagnosis and we give codes for that. So we have the view that we have this diagnosis, there's something wrong with the human being, there's illnesses, there is a norm, and we try to find treatment for those illnesses. And then we work on ourselves, and I like psychotherapy also. I'm not, you know, like, I'm not against it, because I still love my profession. But the view on it is like, we somehow came away from the norm, and we have to work on ourselves to get whole again. And I would say we could always work on ourselves. Of course, there is more deviances and less, you know, there's like an area where you can just do self-development, and there is areas where we go into psychosis and schizophrenia where, you know, somehow treatment is needed, otherwise you somehow can't exist in this world. But somehow the view is that we are not whole. We have to work on ourselves, do therapy in order to get whole, or in order to come into the norm again. Whereas in the spiritual view, how I understand it, is the spiritual view has the view that we are already whole, that we are, you know, the pure self, we are one with everything, and in the core, like the core self, this is a term that Heinz Kohut already, I think in the 50s or 60s, used. The core self is in itself untouched and whole. And the spiritual view is, how can we recognize this core? And once we recognize it, in a way, we can just live. We can integrate the personality aspects and the deficiencies. And, you know, we don't even have to work on them, because we know in the core we are whole.
Makes sense.
And why I felt it's rich to bring those together is because I myself have moved back and forth in these two worlds. You know, I went to India, to retreats, to teachers, to enlightened masters. And then I came back into my psychotherapy practice, and I always went back and forth. And then all of a sudden I said, no, I don't want to always go back and forth. Why not bring it in and work with both aspects with the clients? So that could be that I am just sitting in that core self, and I'm inviting the people into that space, or you know, or also even guiding them in a little meditation in that, where they can recognize the core self, and then we can still work on the personality part. But it's really like a different view that in the core we are always one, we are always whole, already whole, already home.
I think it makes a big difference if you see or treat people from that perspective, rather than you have something wrong that needs to be fixed, like this illness and that. Like, it puts the person, I mean, like you said, maybe there are some mental illnesses that really need the fix, the drug or whatever. But I think if you see people from this perspective, it helps them maybe heal quicker. Because if you say, I know, for example, for stuff I've had physically, or from heard from friends who went to psychotherapists, and they told them, there's nothing I can do for you. You're fucked. It just creates more fear and more pain, and it's not helping at all.
Or the other way around, a psychotherapist can also say, no, you're fine, you don't need help. Yeah. And then you're also true. Like, okay, what can I do?
Yeah.
I would say yes, what you say. There's also some writers, I don't know if I can recall who said it, that, Tom Holmes, Voyages to the Inner World, he writes that psychotherapy accelerates if the therapist has a deep knowing of who they truly are. Mm. It's just an accelerator, because you kind of, you know, you see the client coming in with the issues and you take that serious, mm-hmm. but you see them at the same time already as healed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a totally different, and that's very healing. You know, we know it in the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. If you know you take a pill and it has nothing in it and you are convinced it will help you, it helps you mm-hmm. in most cases, sure. You know. So the whole attitude of the therapist has an enormous effect also on the healing. And there is some interesting people in this world. Jakob Bösch, for example, he was a psychiatrist in Basel in the psychiatric clinic, or also Klaus-Dieter Platsch, a German doctor. And they talk about the medicine of the 21st century, or maybe soon 22nd century, that the new medicine, it will no more be that we think, I'm the doctor, I'm the psychotherapist, I'm going to try to heal mm-hmm. this person. But it's more like we need consciousness for the next step in medicine and in psychotherapy, to be aware that the healing is not coming from here or from the method. Although the methods that I'm coming from, Gestalt therapy, this mm-hmm. is a very beautiful method.
Mm-hmm.
But in my past, I also realized the big breakthroughs I had when I realized, wow, I'm much bigger than this person. I'm much more. And when consciousness comes into the healing part and we realize, wow, it's consciousness which will heal itself through this process, then a total different area comes. And they say, then true healing is really possible.
Mm-hmm.
If it, they don't say everybody will heal, you know, like it's not said that everybody with cancer, everybody with schizophrenia will heal, but then we have a total different view on what will heal.
Mm.
And that said, I just want to say, I also know some clients who are very happy to get a diagnosis. So this is again psychotherapy.
Mm.
It's some people, for example, in borderline or in schizoaffective disorders or whatever, some people struggle and people say, yeah, this will, you know, pass through. But once they realize, this has a name, and they know how to treat it, it can also create release.
Good
point. That's also important to know.
Yeah. I did another podcast about that with a friend who is a psychologist, a yoga teacher and theta healer, and a nurse at the psychiatric hospital. And she said, she doesn't know either. I don't know either, but I would, and maybe you don't know, but you have a perspective on this, that schizophrenia, for example, or people who, hear voices or whatever, could it be something else than schizophrenia? Could it be that they have a gift and they don't know how to use it and they're scared of it?
Yeah, I would say it's a very interesting question. I was very interested of that also when I was working in psychiatric hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wanted to do my final work in the mm-hmm. studies around psychosis,
mm-hmm.
altered state of consciousness, because I was exactly interested around that.
Mm-hmm.
And we could say yes and no. You know, I think people who have psychosis or who feel more, you know, who perceive mm-hmm. more, they're very sensitive beings. We could mm-hmm. say that. And maybe they have a special skill. I was very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
When they told me they hear the drums from Africa, you know, I was there and I was really interested to listen what they had to say. But then when I looked into the, you know, the whole picture of the, how do you say, the schizophrenia, what it consists of, the difficult part in schizophrenia is not, of course, the hallucinations and the fears are also, you know, very frightening. But the difficult part in that is that they have a disruption of the sense of self. So they don't know, in those states, they don't know anymore who they really are. So their whole sense of me is totally fragmented. So they cannot just have hallucinations and then they come back to, okay, here is me again. But it's a very fractured state of self. And this already, you know, this at the base is the problem. That's what I got to understand, because otherwise you could say, hey, let's use this. That's what I thought when I was younger. Let's use this skill and maybe heal it with spirituality. But it's not so easy if the sense of self is fractured. And actually, just today I had a discussion with a healer friend, and she also asked, well, in spirituality, people want to be free of the I, of the ego. But why not? You know, like, I mean, then a lot of psychological illnesses, they're also free of the ego. So why not? You know, what's the danger? And the danger is that if we are not grounded, and that's why also sophrology and psychotherapy says we have to first come into this body, ground ourselves, realize the I, the ego, you know, because this sense of, hey, I'm also this body, helps us to exist and coexist in this world. And once we have a good establishment in that, then we can open. If we open too fast to the spiritual world, it can also, I know some people who had psychosis after that.
But that's you, do you decide? Or do you mean when they do plant medicine or something like that?
In plant medicine, and we also speak in psychology of a predisposition, which of course often you don't know. There is a predisposition in us, but you can sense that if you're, you know, like a predisposition to get a psychosis or not. But you can a little bit sense that, like, if you're very sensitive and, like, for example, we could say if you dissociate easily, if you lose the sense of grounding very easily, if you had maybe smoked a joint once and you realized, wow, I'm already seeing faces or whatever, like, or you're very, very slim, or you have a lot of trauma in the background, then you know, hey, I have to maybe be just a little bit careful. And it doesn't, you know, I also worked with people with psychosis, and with them I just said, who meditate, with them I just said, look, there is times for meditation and there's times for no meditation. And you can start to feel that, you know, time for no meditation is when you feel like, ooh, I'm going out there, I'm losing the grounding. And then it's just no meditation, grounding, walking, breathing, basic stuff, you know?
It's a good reminder to, I mean, the whole talk is about that. I feel all the things you have to say, and this combination of spirituality and psychology, it depends who you are. It depends what you have or whatever. It depends of every situation, basically. That's what you need. If you need maybe more psychotherapy, more spirituality, more meditation, whatever it is, it's not a fixed recipe. It's not, here is the thing, it will heal you. It's a good reminder, and it's like that for everything in life.
And I would say, since I'm giving spiritual psychotherapy in my practice, but I'm also offering this continuing education during 9 months with 4 modules, this is, I would say, maybe also for people who are a bit better, we call it better structured. So I wouldn't recommend to a psychotic person to come to see me in spiritual psychotherapy. You know, and also the education, it's, I would say it's for people who just, they see it and they know, I want to go there. You know, it's like, because it's like, yeah, you have to be interested in one part to do the shadow work, to do the work on yourself and ground and, you know, and to look at the blind spots and all that. And at the same time, to be very curious, how can I enlarge this by the spiritual component? And in the training, I will have the focus highly on the spiritual aspect, because I feel in one demonstration I did in a Gestalt therapy congress, I said the world needs more awake psychotherapists. Yeah. And of course, it's a very provocative thing to say, because awakening you cannot do.
Yeah.
But you can, in a way, push yourself a little bit into this way. And this is my education. This education, spiritual psychotherapy, focuses on that.
Mm-hmm.
How can I awaken to who I truly am?
Mm-hmm.
This is, for me, the end of the spiritual quest, the end of the spiritual search. And it sounds so amazing. Oh, enlightenment, awakening. But it's actually very simple and very silent. It's just the recognizing, I'm this core, this true self inside of me, which is already here, which I've always overlooked. And this core, this true self, is connected with everything else. So basically, I realize that I'm not just this body, mind, organism. I'm much vaster than that.
Yeah.
And here we come again to the terminology, you know, the spiritual or spiritus, I think in Latin, is it? I wrote it down in Latin, is called, spiritus means the breath, like a light breath, the hauch. So spiritual is like, it's a very subtle thing, you know, it's like, you can't really grasp it.
Yeah.
What is it? You know, that's why you can't use it in psychotherapy, because it's not like, it's very subtle. So it's a breath. And then psyche means it's the soul. And in psychology, we speak about the soul and the mind, but also the soul is something very subtle. So we could say, on one level, it's even like they call it a pleonasm, like spirituality and psychology means in a way, in the core, a bit the same. But it has been kind of separated, because psychology, it's scientific, you know, it's like you can have methods and you can measure it and etc. Spiritual is very fluid, is very subtle. In yoga, we call it the subtle body, you know. So it's very difficult to measure. And that's why a lot of psychologists or psychotherapists say, yeah, you know, this esoteric stuff. But in the essence, you know, it has the same stem. It comes, you know, it comes from the same root, these two things.
But it was Jung, no? Who kind of linked both. I don't know much about it, but yes, I've heard it.
There's a couple, and I think Jung was one of the first in his mystical aspects, and that's why they threw him out also in the psychoanalytical world, because they felt, no, if he hears things in the room and stuff, this is not scientific. And you know, when I studied in university in Zurich, there was no Jung. It was only Freud and behavioral therapists. And Jung, you could do facultative, you know, because they, you know, and I thought it was a catastrophe, you know. Here I'm studying psychology, and Jung has been living 10 minutes from here in Küsnacht, where I grew up, and there's no Jung, you know. But this is a little bit what I deal with now, too, is like, if you're going in the realm of spirituality, and you cannot measure what that is, you're leaning out the window a lot, you know, and you're a little bit like, you know, I said maybe 100 years ago, or I don't know, 200 years ago, I would have been burned or, you know,
totally
banished for sure. For that. But I think we are really living in a time, and Jung was one of the first, and there is also modern psychotherapy methods like Gestalt therapy, where I come from, who has awareness in it, or the IBP, the integrative body psychotherapy. They also speak about the true self. So I think the modern psychotherapy or positive psychotherapy, or what you did, POV, MBSR, MBSR, you know, all these modern thing, MBCT, the cognitive awareness therapy. I think it's felt that now spirituality is slowly, slowly coming into the psychotherapy or coming back into the psychotherapy. And even in my curriculum, this spiritual psychotherapy, now I corresponded with the Swiss Psychology Association, FSP, and they said, okay, we're gonna acknowledge the points for continuing education for psychologists. So it shows that it's changing.
Yeah, that's great.
The world is changing, and I think also the profession, the openness towards the spiritual aspects is changing.
Yeah, you talked about POV, and that's why I was curious also to hear your point of view on the subject. So psychology of vision, it means POV, or POV means psychology of vision, and it's a psychotherapist who developed the technique, and it's super scientific. I mean, it's with psychology basics or methods or knowledge, for example, the whole Oedipus thing when you're a kid, you love, when you're a boy, you love your mom, and when you're a girl, you love your dad, and then later in life, you gotta check this out a little bit. and so I learned that, and I don't think, I mean, I knew the Greek tragedy, right, of the same name, but I didn't really know that we all had to look at that. And so basic knowledge, but then combined with weird exercises, you know, like spiritual exercises, like joining, you know, like looking at each other in the eyes and letting the emotions rise, or sending energetically an emotion like love or something to another person who is not in the room even. Or all these exercises that you think, what? But who work on another level. And it helped me a lot, especially in my relationship, my romantic relationship, or any relationship, actually. Because for me, yes, it's great to learn and understand things with the mind, but it has its limits. This is how I understand it. And then once those limits are reached, then you can work on another level. And this is why I think both are great together. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say, yes, for you, for example, this is totally the case. And for me also. And then for each person, we have to look what's the best for them. You know, I know some people who psychoanalysis was very great, and I know some psychotherapists who work very pure since years in their tradition, and they're very good at what they do, so that's also very valid, you know. So I wouldn't say it's only this mix, but this is what I burn for, because I come from a background of walking both roads, and I think you also, because you also have the yoga background, and in yoga we have a lot of work with the subtle body, a lot of breathing. I mean, breathing, we don't talk about breathing in psychotherapy, you know, but breathing, I mean, spiritual, you know, and also in psyche, I think, is also, the breath is also in the name, but we don't really use it. Or for example, the chakras, you know, and the energetical centers, you can do a lot with that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's joyful to integrate. And yet, I think for some people, it's good to have a very puristic psychotherapy, you know, classical stuff. And I also did it. And I think it's nice to go pure for a while, and then maybe open up.
Yep.
And I think the important thing to know is that psychotherapy and psychoanalysis is also one of the psychotherapy methods. A lot of people don't know what is psychotherapy really. There is many different schools. Mm-hmm. All the psychotherapists, they did a psychological studies or a medical doctor studies if they're psychiatrists. And then they did one of the schools, Gestalt therapy, psychoanalysis, talk psychotherapy, etc. So psychotherapy is working on the mind and on the emotions. That's the level where psychotherapy works. So basically, we could also say to bring yourself from the mind a little bit more into the feeling, feeling the feelings, talking about the feelings, and also feeling the body, you know, feeling, okay, if I cannot say what I feel, what do I feel in the body? Ah, I feel a little bit tension in the neck, or I can, you know, just exploring the body, the emotions and the mind, but mostly the cognition, the mind and the emotions. Now, spiritual psychotherapy goes one level deeper or one level further, and that is it goes from the emotions into the essence level, the essence where you, the true self, the core self is, and where everything is linked with everything. So it's a totally different perspective, because it's really like a, how can I feel that I'm much vaster than this body? And in that, if I feel that, and if I feel connected with everything, it's not so strange to send energy to somebody, because you realize you're already connected, you know? And it's no more esoteric, but it's something that becomes more and more like a felt reality. But this is the difference, and this is kind of also the addition, and this is why I feel you can only offer that if you have a firm experience of that. That's why I say, if you want to do spiritual psychotherapy, you have to experience that. It's not a method you learn and then you can go out there. You have to become that. Because how can you open a room of essence if you're not resting in essence? And that's why I also say in the curriculum, in the continuous education to the people, for me, it was not just going into another method. It was a whole change of lifestyle. You know, I'm not taking more than three or four people as clients. I'm not working every day in the same, you know, I teach yoga, then I give meditation, I do workshops and retreats. And my whole being is becoming that. So it's not, a piece of cake. I mean, it's beautiful, but in a way, if you do that, you're also really ready to say, okay, whatever it needs, that's also a very spiritual, strong spiritual path to say, whatever it needs to awaken to the self, I'm going to do it. And in a way, it's the invitation for those kind of people who are working therapeutically, but who also feel like, hey, it's time for something more.
Beautiful. So so you just said who it's for. It's perfect. What else do you have happening this year? Do you have a retreat again at Mandali?
Yeah, I'm giving an Easter retreat at Mandali. It's already fully booked, actually. Yeah, it's a silent retreat with yoga, meditation, satsang, and nature walks. And I'm just opening up a new retreat in the fall in Switzerland. It's also going to be a silent retreat in a new location above Lake Thun. Yeah, with the view on Thun. You can check it out on my website if you're interested. And then, of course, we still have our events with Deeper in the summer. We go out with tents in Ticino for 2 weeks, camping and retreats there with creativity, dance, and meditation. And then same in Christmas time again, also with Deeper. Yeah.
Great.
And so I'm not getting bored.
No, I imagine.
That's why I have to cut my private practice a bit down, because it's really, you know, I also went through some health issues lately. And this is also, we talked in the beginning about this. This is also part of the spiritual life. It's not that, you know, once you awaken to who you are, you are going to be happy and all is good. No, you go through strong stuff, but you're ready to face it. You're ready to listen. Okay, what does it want to tell me? And it told me loud and clear, you have to cut down from how much you do. No choice.
I think it's always a good idea to do less. I really do. It's my life philosophy.
To do what? To cut down?
To do less, yeah. I think we do way too much, for sure.
There's this nice book called The Age of Less. It's more focused on having less, you know, having less good stuff.
Also, yeah.
And totally. It's beautiful. It shows that, people are more happy if they're not so focused on having more.
Yeah.
But it's difficult if everything is so interesting, you know, that it's like, okay, everything is interesting, but still cut it down.
And that's what we were talking off podcast. I was just telling you that I got a job just before recording the podcast.
Right.
And I've been looking intensely for the past week or few weeks, but really this week a lot, and I noticed that I was giving my attention and energy in all the directions possible. And after a few days of intensely doing this, I was like, this is not gonna work. It cannot be this. And I know, since I just told you, it's my motto, it's my to do less. I know I have to focus on not just one thing, but not many more things, you know, like focusing the energy, the attention to not everywhere and all the things.
And that's the beauty, what I responded, no, is that's the beauty of this crossover of spirituality and work on yourself or psychotherapy, that on one hand, you can always come back to your center and realize, I don't even have to do anything. You know, I mean, this job came to you through somebody. So in a way, or I just heard from a person, she just got her instrument that she wished for and it came. And sometimes it doesn't come, you know, but somehow on that level, we can relax and always come back to that. Yeah. And on the other level, as long as we are in this body, our personality, our conditioning will play out. And that one with you, it's maybe, getting nervous. Yeah. With me, is wanting to do too many things. Yeah. And then, you know, and then once you have strong issues like health issues or financial issues, those are strong teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say we always long for liberation, for happiness, for all these blissful states, which are nice. But I feel those hard lessons, they're just as valid, because my cough, my issue, my health issue, I was putting her or him on a chair and I asked, what do you want to tell me? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is really the spiritual action you can do. You can ask the symptom, what is it that you want from me? And the cough always said, hey, I'm going to be in your face until you learn it, until you cool down and you follow. And now slowly, slowly, is leaving me. And it's, you know, it might not always go that way, but you can get interested for those teachings.
Especially, I guess mental, I don't know so much, but especially body things that you might get, illnesses or whatever, pain. It's often, it's so interesting to ask. But you need to have, you need to be able to listen to what it says. It maybe, I don't know, you probably have done that for a long time, but maybe at the beginning when you put your cough on a chair, maybe you were like, what am I doing? Like, what is this? Or maybe you were already so familiar with that kind of work that you saw it right away. But for me, it was a real practice to be able to come out of the head and start to listen to this really subtle thing that tells you, or maybe you see it or you feel it or a word comes, or whatever.
Yeah, it's very valid what you say, because we tend to overhear that little voice, because first it's very tiny little voice, you know, and then once the symptoms get bigger, it gets louder, you can't avoid. But still, you know, how our society functions is like, if I'm having illness, I'm running to the doctor, I'm getting medicine, and I think, okay, this is going to heal me. And of course, medicine is very valid. I also went to the doctor, and I think it's valid to check out what's wrong on that level. But then again, if they don't find enough, or if they don't find the whole truth, then it's very interesting. And this is self-empowering too, and also taking responsibility on and saying, hey, what can I do to heal? Because we tend to put that all out to the medical doctors and the medicine, etc. And you know, I mean, this is a whole other talk.
But yeah, yeah.
But you know what I've got to say? Yeah? It's you know, the whole pharma industry, we're living in Basel now, is like one of the centers of the pharma industry. Yeah. And, you know, thanks, because at least we don't, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
Have to pay too much, you know, Steuern and all that. Anyway, but they're, of course, interested not in healthy people. I mean, this is very strong to say, but, you know, and this all is also connected with the diagnostic manuals and these same people sitting in those areas. Anyway, but we are not having a society based on how can we get self-responsible to heal ourselves. We are living in a society where, oh, we want to have this and this, and if we are not feeling well, we are getting medication, and the ones who produce medication are interested to have a lot of you know, sales in the medication. So it's really a change of view, and to say, okay, I take some of the responsibility back, and I just start to listen, like you say. What does this, little voice say? And we have to get serious also about this voice, because if we tend to overhear that voice, and it gets louder and louder, and we don't want to hear it, it will create symptoms. And what I have experienced, and I see in my surrounding, the symptoms, they're getting strong sometimes. So I really suggest to really listen, to learn to listen to this voice.
At the beginning.
As soon as you can, exactly. Come to meditation.
Yeah. And yoga.
Yoga, exactly.
And psychotherapy for your,
yes,
for your mind.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way we do it is like getting medication to heal faster, to be able to do faster as well, you know, to do all the things. And that's why I say, yeah, no, doing less is amazing for the body. Yeah.
And I think I did one video on my YouTube channel, BB Free, which is called the Anti-Career.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I watch that.
No. You might like it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And this is really about that. This is like, hey, if I'm really true to what's calling, if I'm really a seeker of who I truly am, I have to be true to myself. And then maybe that means living with less, earning a bit less, less clients, but more space for what really wants to come out of me, what I have to offer to the world. And of course, again, the society is not so interested in that, because people who do a lot, they're the motor of the economy. So just to see that, you know, and so in a way, if you exit that, if we both say work less, we are not part of this motor anymore.
No,
but we are part of this engine, electric engine of the new consciousness. And that's what I burn for, you know, this wave of the new consciousness, which is already coming behind this old world, still functioning, you know, but it's not functioning so well anymore.
Mm-mm.
So we can already co-create the new wave.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
New consciousness. Yeah.
On the one hand, I want to finish on that, but I still have something to say about those little voices, or this little whisper, this really subtle whisper, because I think it's everything to get to know yourself. And I started to do an exercise that Lee Harris, maybe you know him, American channeler, a musician. And anyway, he says, ask your soul. You can journal and you can ask your soul what it wants to tell you today. And I've been trying, and you know, it's weird, of course, and sometimes nothing comes, but I notice for me, it's not so much in the writing that it comes, but it's in those, while I'm writing the question, I'm already, I maybe see something or think of something, and it's so subtle, this little thought, this little image, that you can miss it so easily, you know? And it's those in between, I don't even know how to explain it, but
yeah.
Does it make sense?
Yes, yes. It speaks a lot to me, and I like this exercise. My experience is the more space I make, the more I'm in a natural meditative space. The moment you decide to do this exercise, maybe your whole organism already settles down.
Yep.
And once the nervous system settles down, you're already in a slight trance, in a slight hypnoid. And in that slight trance, you're very receptive for the voices and the messages of, we could say, existence or the universe or the true self. So I myself got many, many inputs like that from just these free spaces. Either I sit in meditation or I walk. But the importance for me is that I have space.
Yeah.
Because I cannot just between the gym and cooking say, okay, now I'm listening to the voice of my soul. Where is it? Where is it?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
You have to make space. And this, in a way, needs that you give it some value, that you say, hey, you know what? This other stuff, what I all have to do, and I can spend my whole life doing stuff. Besides that, I need to start to make space for this little voice. I really like it. It's like a little being. And I want that because I want to give that more value. And where I put my focus, this will grow.
Yeah.
And just to say on this note, this whole curriculum, my continuous education, spiritual psychotherapy, it came to me during COVID, in the COVID time, because I had so much space. And I was just, you know, here, and all of a sudden it was really like downloaded. It was like,
that's
I just
amazing.
Wrote four papers, and then it was, the structure was there. It was like, okay, there I'm going to do it in this structure. And I didn't do it, you know. So I think that's the magic that can happen.
Yeah. It's like your book also, no? It came to
Same.
You like that.
Same. All the episodes, I was in a silent month, 1 month. And they just came through me. And I also had the feeling I didn't write them. Sometimes it wrote and I was like, okay, it just wrote, you know, that's a really beautiful state. Yeah,
I love it.
I think many writers maybe have that, you know, I can't imagine.
I think so, because I can tell you, it's so hard to write a book when you
don't because
have
you're
that.
Because you're on it, right? You're on it, right?
Well,
now.
Yeah, let's see. No, but even, you know, I'm always super amazed by fiction writers because I can't do it. I thought I wanted to do it. There's a whole other topic that I would love to share, but we don't have time for that. But they must be channeling. It's not possible to come up with those things just with your own brain. I think it's just, yeah. Thank you for sharing. I think that's how it should be. You know, I really feel, otherwise you're just struggling so much, you know, if you think, okay, I'm gonna do a program, okay, but how should I make it, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it explains also on that note why so many artists and writers, you know, they're not making a living of it, of their, you know, a lot of them, they can't make a living of their art or of their writing, or, you know, for example, Giacometti, and a lot of writers were very, or artists were very poor in their lifetime. Only later they got famous. But it's in a way, you feel that they have no choice. It's the same call. It's like a calling to follow something, you know, to follow that, even if it costs my life, even if it costs, I mean, of course, you want to self-contain yourself, but I really feel it's a similar calling, just to follow their true little voice that they really listen to. And they say, no, I have to write. You know, even George Orwell, who wrote this book 1984, I just looked an emission on him, and he was very ill. He had tuberculosis in the end, but he knew, I need to write this book, 1984, which was this vision of control state.
Yeah.
And he was sick in his bed with a heavy typing machine on his lap, and he was typing basically day and night, just to, like, an obsessed, you know. But he knew, this book, I need to finish this book.
Yeah.
And it's in a way, I feel it's a similar drive, you know, like, just I have to follow that, why I'm here.
I have so much to say. This morning I was at yoga, and I felt so good in my body. I was so flexible, and I haven't been for the past 4 or 5 years. It felt stiff. I had back pain. I had muscle contraction. Even when I was at your retreat, I was so in pain physically. It was great. I had a lot of fun. I loved it. I loved everything about it, but I was so in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because, and I don't know if I've shared that with you, but yeah, maybe I did in the car on the way back. But I said, I thought the whole time, I should do retreats. Why don't I do retreats? Yeah. No, I should not do retreats, you know, because I put so much pressure on myself and my body hates it. And this morning in class, while I was practicing, I was like, oh my God, maybe because I just shared that I just got the job, and I've been going through a process in the past few weeks, month, that I thought, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go back to a normal job, and I'm going to, oh, it's hard. It's vulnerable to share that on the podcast, but I think it's going to be valuable for people to hear. I thought, yeah, I got this. I didn't think, I went through a process of deconditioning my own self, of thinking that entrepreneurship was better than being employed, and thinking, oh, being a yoga teacher is so cool, or an entrepreneur, or a coach, or a therapist. And I really thought, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go back to a normal job. And because I used to feel much better in my body when I used to do that, even though my mind didn't like it too much, but my body felt really great. And I thought, oh my God, maybe it was just that. Maybe it was the pressure I put on myself to be an entrepreneur and to make it as an entrepreneur. And I did not so far. Financially, I mean, huh? Financially. So, which is what is the highest value in society. So, I realized that. And
because,
so,
because for me, you are an entrepreneur, no? You're having your podcast, you're doing it. I understand you're not earning money or much money with it, but, but yeah, for me, you are it, and it's true. How do we define it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a very important task that you're adding now, is this acceptance of what is, that it's very important. And a lot of people also who come to psychotherapy, they have the wish for change, or they want to achieve what they wish for, or, you know, self-empowerment, and all the coaching, everything is based on that. Of course, it has its place, but I feel this process of self-acceptance is not such a loud, funny part of it, but it's so valid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different, like we said before, it's different than those artists who know you, who are obsessed, and they know, I have to write this book, and this is my goal, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to die, because he died right 1 year later, this George Orwell. But It's a different process, and I myself also find myself in this process, which is, my teacher always said, this is to become very human, you know, to even after awakening, to come back into full humanness, and to own that, hey, I'm just like all the others, even if I'm doing retreat, you know. I was in the mountains on the weekend, I was like, I felt like a failure, you know, and I really felt, and it was so important to feel that because people perceive me a lot like, she's having success and doing retreats. But I felt a deep sense of failure, you know, in all the areas of my life where I failed. And many things came, and I was just there. And I remember I was on a breakfast table in a hotel, and I was just crying. And I just felt like I need to feel that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this is coming back into full humanness. And yeah. even though I'm the vast universe, I'm going through as a human being experiences of deep failure. And I feel this is so valid and so important. And thank you so much for sharing it.
And thank you too. And I think it shows exactly that we all feel that, you know, no matter what you did, achieved or do, we all feel it on a certain level at a certain point, and it's normal, actually.
And even the most successful people feel it, most probably. And that's the thing. And I fell into this trap so many times that I thought, okay, these people in Hollywood or these people with big families and wealth, they have it. It's just a lie.
But I have to tell it to myself. Me too, you know, I've been thinking since in my early 20s already, I thought, okay, I'm going to get my shit together, I'm going to get a good job, and I'm going to, and I'm like, no, I will never be like that. Well, now I got a good job, but I will, too often, I think, and it comes back to what you said about your core self, I listen to other people and what they think and what they do, and I see only the area where I don't excel and where maybe they excel. But then I just compare those parts, and then I forget all the other areas in my life where I excel, actually, you know? Yeah, we tend to compare ourselves just in one thing.
And that's why I think it has been Buddha who said it. I'm not sure, but I think it was him saying, surround yourself with like-minded people. Surround yourself with like-minded people. Doesn't mean you should not have people around you which are different. But if you're on this path, and we can say maybe 20% of the population are on this path, 80% live in an ordinary lifestyle based on materialism, etc. So I feel it's very important because I can see it in myself. If I'm too much with people based on outer values, I'm getting like a, you know, something is like activated in me, and I'm coming home and feeling like shit. And I'm like feeling like I'm missing out. But as soon as I'm home, I'm realizing, no, I have everything. You know, but I realized that I have to be careful with this body-mind organism, because it gets, I also say that in my training, it gets more and more sensitive. Once you get more spiritual, you get more sensitive. I have in Human Design an open emotional center. So all that stuff gets into me. So I can go in these rounds because I'm living in the world, but I have to dose that right. I have to go in and out, because otherwise I'm a mess afterwards.
Yeah.
As a person, of course, I'm a mess. not as a core.
No, totally. I feel like with COVID, it also made us more sensitive. But even just, I think this year is really for me about learning to follow my little voice, you know, the thing that says, hey, no, I'm gonna do this shit. Everybody else thinks it's crazy. I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna do it, you know.
Yes, owning baby. It.
Yeah. Tomorrow, oh my God, what am I doing? And the day after, yes, I've got this. Yeah, it's just also normal. But I feel that getting older helps, you know, with that. To notice your patterns, to notice when you felt good, when you didn't feel good, why, and all this.
Oh, I love you so much, Ophelia. You're such a, I just see you follow your way. And there's no doubt that it's just going to be beautiful. It's already beautiful, you know.
It is already beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, if I don't stress, it's beautiful, you know. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If people
Thank
want
you.
to see you in yoga class, they can come to Biyoga.
Biyoga, exactly. On Tuesday, I do a lunch, Vinyasa Flow, 12:15.
Yeah. Otherwise, the retreats or the workshops or the Ausbildung, the training that starts in March.
You can go on my website. Maybe you will link it, or I don't know.
I will link it.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you
and
so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hopefully, it's always so inspiring to talk to you with your beautiful wide horizon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening.